You're listening to Daily Paul Radio. Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. WGRR Digital.
She's got moxie, and she knows how to use it. Your late night highly caffeinated host, the one and only smoking Argus, Allison Britton!
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Allison Bricker Show. Thanks for hanging on over the short. That was the Ben Swan Truth and Media moment. I believe we have Ben on the line. Ben Swan, are you with us?
I am, Allison. Thank you for having me on.
Awesome. Thanks so much for coming back. Were you able to hear your Truth and Media moment?
I did.
We play them every third hour. You get, we have the three in rotation, and so about every 3 hours.
That's terrific. Well, that, you know, we're continuing to follow that story with Charlie Earle that we talked about there. So fingers crossed that things are going to play out the right way for him and for the Libertarian Party in Ohio. I'm very hopeful that they will. But unfortunately, I think it's going to take, if it does happen that way, it's going to take intervention from a federal judge, which is too bad that you have to go outside of the state in order to get some kind of hearings.
You know, and I think that was from last week we received that one. And I know this week I've put him into rotation. I guess it hasn't started yet. But there's another story that you recorded coming out of South Carolina this time, right, where the state is like kind of the same vein. The state is denying a primary to Libertarian candidates.
It's the same song but a different verse, I guess, you might say. I mean, it's the same basic idea, which is Libertarians as a party are being told they're not allowed to be on the ballot. But the reasoning is different in South Carolina. South Carolina passed a new law last year that essentially provides equal access to the ballot. And the way it's set up, it essentially says that in order for a party to have their candidates on a ballot, they would have to hold a nominating convention. And so the Libertarian Party is trying to get this nominating convention put together. And now the State Election Commission is coming back and saying, well, you know what, don't even bother, because we don't have enough money to put you on the ballot anyway. We can't afford it to reprint ballots and put you on. Well, the ballots in South Carolina are electronic, so it's a software issue. It's not a printing issue. But they keep coming up with reasons why they can't comply, and so they're saying, you know, we're not going to put you on the ballot. Sorry, you're out of luck.
That's incredible. I don't know what it was like in Ohio, but I know here in Indiana, one of the big, like, secret scams of local state party politics is that once you rise to a certain level, a percentage of the vote, you get part of this slush fund, which is garnered from those vanity license plates. And if you're a major political party, you get a percentage of those funds, which I remember when I first found out that, like, taxpayers are literally supporting private party functions. I wonder what the case is. Do you know what it was like in Ohio or what the case is in South Carolina?
Well, in South Carolina, it is a case of taxpayers funding those primaries, and it's done in various ways. Ohio's the same way. I mean, basically every state in the country, Republicans and Democrats do not pay for their own primary. Taxpayers pay for those primaries. The problem is we begin to fall into this deception that tells us that that's just part of the political process, primary system and then general election. But the problem is anytime, as we saw in 2012, when, you know, voters try to get involved in the primary system, they're essentially pushed out because the party's saying, no, we are a private club, so election law doesn't apply to us. And that's what we saw happening in 2012. In fact, you know, we just released a Truth and Media piece about this new campaign called In Partisanship, and the goal is to sue different states around the country that are providing taxpayer money to these private entities to hold their nominating process, but at the same time having closed primaries where voters can't go in and vote unless they're a part of the private club.
Of course, it's a big, as George Carlin used to say, it's a big club and you ain't in it.
That's right.
So now,
that's
see,
exactly
I was
right.
I was talking before you came on the air because you left a major news organization that we were listening in the first hour, Ben, to that. Have you heard the entire audio conversation with Newland from the Department of State, like literally plotting to which puppet to insert into Ukraine?
Yes, I have. I have.
So now we were saying how horrible. Yeah, how horrible that is. But at the same time, how exciting it is that we have all these tools at our disposal, and someone with such a record such as yourself left a major news organization because you really wanted to dig into politics and you really wanted to provide a true journalist service to people. And you're doing it again now, and you've got a Indiegogo campaign. Is that correct?
That's right. We are trying to fund through crowdsourcing our second season here of the Truth of Media Project. So we are on Indiegogo. And, you know, we're asking people to contribute already. We have over $25,000 contributed in our first 2 weeks. So we are well on our way. We're trying to raise $100,000. And the goal is to do the kinds of stories that mainstream media won't. I mean, what we're seeing happening all across, not just the country, but across the world, is this flood of information that's coming in. But, you know, national media hasn't budged a bit. I mean, they're not talking about anything of legitimacy in Ukraine. In fact, I just released a quick Truth of Media Moment video tonight on BenSwan.com talking about the part of the story with Ukraine that the Western media ignores and U.S. media ignores, which is the fact that the U.S., through both a combination of private individuals like Pierre Omidyar, the guy who founded eBay, and with government agencies, they funded the uprisings in Ukraine. I mean, Omidyar gave $335,000 to a group called New Citizen that was helping to create the unrest and the overthrow of the president of Ukraine. USAID provided 56% of that money. But U.S. media doesn't talk about it. So the American people are under this impression that Vladimir Putin is attempting to invade Ukraine and take it over, when we don't even recognize it as a population. Actually, our government and very wealthy American citizens and people in the West put money into creating unrest and creating a vacuum that Putin's now taking advantage of. We started the process, and then it creates this kind of chaos that spirals out of control. As you know, Allison, that is par for the course, but the average American person doesn't know because media won't tell them.
And this is why I love having you on the show, Ben. I wanted to give you an opportunity to promote your Indiegogo campaign, and you got right to the meat and potatoes of, like, this issue of Ukraine. You're like, yeah, we're doing an Indiegogo campaign, but the story is enormous, and you're so absolutely correct. I mean, if I go online and I look for this clip with Valerie Newland from the Department of State, the one segment that the media has actually reported on is the FEU statement, and that those videos have hundreds of thousands of views. This entire audio conversation where they're plotting which one of the three puppets would make the best puppets to install into Ukraine, it has a measly 7,000 views. And that's just I'd like to think that new media is making a larger impact, but you're exactly right. No one knows that, like, hello, the U.S. government was openly talking about overthrowing a democratically elected leader of a country.
Right. That was the entire intent from the beginning. And remember, too, even when you look back to 2004 and the Orange Revolution in Ukraine, well, that was funded by the National Endowment for Democracy and George Soros. And sometimes when you say these things, Allison, as you know, it almost sounds crazy, right?
Oh, like, absolutely. Yes.
Guys, these guys are sitting there and they're plotting. No, the paper trail is not even hard to find. They're pouring money into creating unrest, and they pretend it's for democracy. It's never for democracy. It's the question is, who's the master going to be? Are you going to serve Russia, or are you going to serve Europe? And that's what's happened in Crimea, was the U.S. created all this unrest. They helped in the overthrow, financially, in the overthrow of the president of Ukraine. When Yanukovych is out, now we have this new leader who's been installed in this place, which is a completely illegitimate form of government. Our government calls it legitimate, and then Crimea turns around and says, hey, hold on, we're not going to be a part of that because we don't like those guys. We don't want to be in the EU. We don't want to be a part of the IMF and their system. We don't want your fiat currency. We're going to actually break away from Ukraine, and we're going to go join Russia. And the people of Ukraine vote in a referendum in order to move into the Russian Federation, and the West screams and yells and says, it's not legitimate.
Yeah, it's amazing,
it's
isn't
mind-boggling.
It? It is. It's so right. The country that always promotes democracy is we've gone to war for democracy like for how many different times, protecting democracy around the globe with the American Empire, and here it is. This and Ukraine used to be part of the USSR, and it fell and became a separate state, correct, after the dissolution of the USSR. So that
correct.
Was acceptable. That secession was acceptable because we beat the evil empire, as Reagan said. But now this group who wants to go back to Russia, oh, well, that's totally illegitimate. And my point on this, or at least what I feel is the real issue, is that this provides legitimacy to secession as a legal maneuver. And I don't think the U.S. government is turning a blind eye or discounts the growing sentiment of secession all over this country.
Well, no, I agree with you. And interestingly, there is another, and I'll bet you most of your listeners have no idea, there is another push for referendum for secession that is taking place actually in Europe. That's getting virtually no coverage anywhere.
Is this the Venice one until Friday,
yes,
correct? Yes. Isn't
yes.
that awesome?
Venice is attempting to secede from Italy. And no one's talking about this. And why are they attempting to secede? For the exact same reasons, by the way, that Crimea doesn't want to join the EU. Because they say, we don't want to be a part of the euro. Italy is drowning in debt. And they say the people in Venice are having to pay for these horrible decisions that are being made on a national level in Italy, and so they want to break away. And in my opinion, my humble opinion, I think that is the best possible outcome across the world if we could start to see that happen, are smaller states of people breaking away and saying, we're going to self-govern, we're going to self-rule, and we're going to break away from this system that is attempting to pour everyone into this one banking system that runs everything. So
absolutely,
it's great to see that
yes.
happen.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and you're right. Again, well, anywhere in America, American news sites, most of the main ones, you know, MSNBC, CNN, even Drudge Report, no one's really reporting on Venice. And Venice apparently was its own republic up until like 1795 when Napoleon conquered them. And so, yeah,
right.
They don't want anything to do with this Greece debt. And then isn't it like Scotland or Ireland, isn't somebody else voting for secession in the... to break away from the United Kingdom in the summer?
Yes, Scotland is.
Scotland is
attempting a referendum in order to break away as well. And of course, the threat is, well, hey, if you break away, you can't be a part of the EU. You'd have to go back and apply on your own. Hey, if you break away, you're not going to be able to use the euro. And everyone who's trying to break away is saying, that's why we're leaving.
They just don't seem
that's
to get it.
That's why we want to get out. Yeah.
Nobody likes the bankers. I mean, and that's what it really comes down to. And it's really like a horrible international banking thriller that, like, we're installing all of these, like, heads of IMF to saddle these countries with massive amounts of debt, endless bailouts. And then you hear Yellen today talk about, well, interest rates are going to have to go up. They talk about cutting back the money printing, what they call tapering, $10 billion a month to $55 billion every month. And the stock market collapses. Well, it doesn't collapse, but it crashes again. And I'm reading more about more and more financial people jumping out of windows. You think our chickens are coming home to roost here from a financial aspect within the, you know, next 10 years?
Well, one of the problems that we have, look, I think the banking system, the way that it's been set up, is this is the new form of conquering nations. Right, we don't have to conquer with militaries anymore. You just conquer them with their currency, and you're essentially enslaving people in these systems. So, for instance, in the case of Ukraine, if Ukraine joins the European Union and the IMF and all that, and becomes entangled with all these entities, what happens? Well, the people of Ukraine don't have a say because a few people who have been installed in the government are going to make this decision for them. They're going to be issued huge amounts of debt in order to make your country better, which is always kept at the top. It never gets to the people, and it's kept at the top. But then the people are now on the hook to pay back debt for money that has no effect on their life, right? It didn't benefit them all, but they're enslaved to it. And I think that's why Crimea, you know, pulled away. And I think that's why in the United States, look, we have not gone through yet any kind of real suffering as a result of the Federal Reserve Bank's policies. We have not yet gone through massive hyperinflation. We have not gone through, you know, skyrocketing interest rates that eventually are going to come, that are then going to match the inflation. We have not gone through the incredible devaluation or rapid devaluation of the dollar that I think is coming. And because we haven't been through it yet, it's easy to ignore it. As soon as we start to hit some of those things, and I think we're on the you know, the precipice here of really dealing with those, two things will happen. One, I think there is so much attention on the Federal Reserve right now, thanks to Ron Paul, thanks to the fact that this congressman from Texas drew Americans' eyeballs to this institution that is not a federal entity. I think people are going to resist. I think they're going to pull back and they're going to say, no, wait a minute. Why are we suffering? Because you guys insisted on printing all of this money, devaluing our currency, and then where is it? You just funneled it all into banks.
Exactly.
And so I think the moment the new media is really going to be that moment when it's a chance for people to really see, you know, the mask is off.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's what makes it all the more bizarre, like that the Obama administration doesn't seem, John Kerry, Biden, none of them. I think it's a very dangerous game to play with Russia to say we're going to throw on economic sanctions because, you know, if you follow financial news a little bit, you know that for the last 6 years, China has been going around and trying to negotiate all these bilateral trade deals where the trade takes place in each home currency and cuts out the dollar. And they've been pushing to get rid of the petrodollar. And when when oil is no longer priced in dollars, that's when hyperinflation comes to America.
Rapidly happening.
Yes, and I mean, like, that's why I think the administration is totally disconnected from reality. I don't know if they are I don't know if they really are. They believe they're as evil as they are, or they're just this stupid. Because that seems like a really dangerous game to play, to threaten economic sanctions when you have two other superpowers that have already been rattling around trying to get bilateral trade negotiations without the U.S. dollar. I just, this whole notion of, well, we're the world's reserve currency and that's never going to change, that's where I think the rude awakening is coming.
But everyone at the top, Allison, they know that's coming. They know that the world's reserve currency being the dollar is coming to an end. They know that. Our media, if they were paying attention, knows it, but they won't say anything about it. Right? The absolute silence on that issue. And as you said, if you're paying attention, even half of the amount of attention you should be paying, you know that the Chinese are working so actively, the Russians are working so actively to set up all these, as you said, bilateral trade agreements to make sure that oil does not continue to be bought and sold in dollars. And you watch the Chinese building this massive refinery in Saudi Arabia. That's going to be the world's largest refinery. You see the junk for oil deals they have with Iran. You see the agreements that they've already worked out with the Russians and left the United States completely out of. But because the U.S. Media ignores it and does not talk about these issues, and that's why, by the way, why we really started the Truth in Media Project, because when I was working for the Fox station in Cincinnati, you know, I'm talking about this stuff on local TV, and I was so frustrated with why are these conversations not happening on a higher level, not happening on the national level. It's infuriating.
Was that like a wake-up call to you? Did you really believe that? What was your perception before? I just want to back up a little, and I'm sorry I had to cut you off. What did you think when you were going into journalism? Did you have a vision of this as like it was still a very pristine institution? And was it shocking to you to see how corporate the media has become and they are just like the lapdogs of the state? Was that shocking at all?
Well, I don't know if it was shocking in the beginning, because when I got into it, I didn't have any real desire to like spread truth around the world or to speak to, you know, the heart of these issues in this dramatic way, or even to really be an investigative journalist. Like, I actually got into it as a photographer because I needed a job, and I got in front of the camera because I needed to make more money. And so it wasn't this, you know, crusade of mine to educate the masses. And then over the years, you know, and I think I was a pretty good just broadcaster for a long time. I won a bunch of awards and did well and had lots of job offers and moved up, and it was an easy job for me. I was good at it. And it wasn't until I started to realize there were all these things that just weren't being discussed because I wasn't even aware of them. You know, if you came to me 5 years ago and said, hey, Lynn, did you know that the Chinese and the Russians are working actively to unhinge the dollar from petroleum? I wouldn't know what you were talking about. No idea.
Right on.
So for
right
me, it was a process, and you're starting to see a little bit and a little bit more and a little bit more, and then all of a sudden you say, now, wait a minute. If I'm finding this stuff and it's not really hidden, it's hidden in plain sight, how is it that the folks who are on that national level, you know they're seeing it, someone's showing it to them, someone's talking to them about it on some level, and they're choosing not to talk about it? Because I guarantee you this, if I was sitting in Piers Morgan's seat, and since Piers couldn't get an audience, and I sat in the seat instead and said, let's have a conversation about petroleum and the petrodollar, I could triple that guy's ratings in 60 days.
Oh, there's no doubt about it, Ben Swan. You would be, oh, God, I would love to see you take the place of, I would actually turn on cable news again.
Well, I'm telling you, because we'd be the only people in the entire country talking about this issue it's not fanciful. It's not made up, right? It's not a theory, a conspiracy theory. Look, these are the facts of what's happening, and nobody's telling you this. I think if you would get up and say that, it would be stunning the response from people because they would say, I had no idea.
Yeah,
I had no clue.
Absolutely, because here is the thing. I think a lot of Americans still today don't look at foreign news sources because you're exactly right. You can look over on Der Spiegel, you can look at India Times, you can look at Financial Times, you can look at papers from New Zealand like The Sun and The Star from Canada, and they are reporting on these bilateral trade talks, and they even talk about how China is actively pursuing. But if you read the New York Times and you go to the Washington Post or the traditional American outlets, you are not getting that story at all.
Not at all. Not at all.
Not even a just... Again, everyone knows that that woman said F the EU, and that's about the extent of the narrative.
Right, and that's where it became, you know, I'll say this, the spin doctors did a pretty good job of hiding that whole conversation by saying, oh, she dropped the F-bomb. Oh, naughty girl, we'll kind of wag our finger at her because she said a bad word, and that's what it turned into.
She said a bad word while talking about overthrowing an entire country.
Exactly.
How does your head not explode over that? I mean, it's like, what? Where are our priorities? I don't understand these days. It's just,
well, and
it's
because
insane.
There's no context. No one's putting this stuff into context on a national level. And that's where I think the population, again, is struggling because, look, the population hears what you tell them. They've been trained to hear what you tell them. And so they can hear a little bit here and a little bit there, and then you say, well, and so, you know, it comes down to she used a bad word and she shouldn't have done that when talking about the EU. Instead of saying, let's not focus on that, let's focus on the really important part here, which is that as a nation, we're talking about, you know, sanctions, which are an act of war, against a major superpower that is Russia, because the Russians are responding to a vote by the people of Crimea, and we're completely ignoring the fact that we, as you said, helped to fund and orchestrate the overthrow of a sovereign nation and the democratically elected president of a sovereign nation. It wasn't like the guy was a warlord who had taken over.
Not at all. Not from what I remember hearing. And I was listening to Scott Horton the other day, and he says there are reports now that those snipers were actually just like were mercenaries, and they were hired. I mean, I don't know if you've heard that angle of the story, but they were just like taking pot shots at everyone to try to instigate the riots and the revolution even more.
And there's a doctor in Ukraine who's become very well known now. There's a recorded conversation between the head of Estonia, one of the high officials in Estonia, and someone else talking about this, but there's a doctor in Ukraine who was saying that the snipers who were shooting were not police snipers. And she's becoming very famous in Ukraine because she's saying, we need to look at what's happening here because this was instigated. And there are a lot of claims from inside Ukraine that the police were not shooting, that the president of Ukraine was not ordering snipers to shoot of their own people, and that famous video where the guys are rolling backwards over the street,
right,
where they're being shot, those were guys who were hired. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So that's
conversation. There's a whole, no, not, I don't even think they were like Blackwater. I don't think they were even that talented.
But they were mercenaries, though. They were some sort of just like snipers for hire.
Yeah.
Wow. That's...
Yeah. And there's no proof right now, by the way. There's no proof that that was the case. But again, that's the conversation that's happening in Ukraine. And it's not happening in the West. No one in the West is having that conversation.
No, because every time I hear a Fox News update, it's at the top of the hour. It's always about how illegitimate the vote in Crimea was, and that the Americans will not accept this as a... they will not recognize that Crimea is now part of Russia. And that's... they just... whatever takes the spotlight off the real issue is seem... but they seem to be scrambling. They don't seem to have it all together.
Well, and again, if you step back from it and you say, what does this look like? What does this ultimately mean? And if you were intellectually honest, you would see that it really comes down to the right of self-rule. Do we as Americans believe that people have the right to self-rule? That means that you have to accept what they want, regardless of whether or not it's what you want. And there's no question. You know, somebody said to me recently, I was doing an interview, they said, well, how did you get 95% of the vote to want to go to Russia? I said, well, first of all, a lot of the folks who didn't want to be part of this referendum stayed home. So it's not difficult to get 95% of the vote if the vast majority of the people who show up at the polls want to do this and everybody else is boycotting.
Absolutely. Hey, Ben, we're about to go to the top of the hour news. Can you stay over for just another one more segment after the top of the hour, or
sure.
Do you have to go? Excellent.
No, that's fine.
You're listening to the Allison Bricker Show here on Daily Paul Radio. I'm speaking with Ben Swan. We'll be right back after the top of the hour news.
She's got Mati. And she knows how to use it. Your late night highly caffeinated host, the one and only smoking artist, Allison Bricker.
And thanks so much for sticking around. This is the Allison Bricker Show here on Daily Paul Radio. I am, of course, your host, Allison Bricker. We are speaking with Ben Swan, who was gracious enough to wait over the news. Sorry, Ben, I had squashed every other break because we were having a good conversation, but I had to take the news. So thanks so much for sticking with us. Or maybe Ben didn't stick with us.
Sorry, I'm still here. I'm there.
Ben's still here. Excellent.
I was muted. Sorry.
Not a problem. Hey, that happens to me quite often as well. The reason I wanted to get your opinion on this little aspect that ties into the Crimea, the Crimean situation. Have you noticed it seems to be an uptick in the articles resounding to that, well, you know, this whole Ron Paul, humble foreign policy stuff, you know, we can't allow Putin to invade Russia. And now they're talking about, as you heard at the top of the hour, that if any more Russian aggression and imperial expansion is experienced, there will be military action by the United States.
I was going to say, I thought that it was a very appropriate news update to have fallen in the middle of this conversation, because I think it highlights exactly what we were talking about. The way it's framed and the words that were used, Russian aggression, naked Russian aggression, they said, right? So it's this idea that the Russians are aggressively trying to conquer Ukraine. The idea that the Russians are attempting to conquer Baltic states, attacking NATO allies. I mean, again, you step back from it and you say, wait a minute, to actually convince people of this requires that you completely ignore some of the most critical things that have taken place over the past, not just weeks or months, but the past few years in Ukraine, where the U.S. and the West have actively worked to create unrest. Now, I'm not a Russian apologist, and I'm not a fan of Vladimir Putin, per se.
No,
but I am
in
a fan
fact,
of the
you're,
truth.
You're absolutely, and your One Truth in Media moment, you talk about how, you know, Russia has been hypocritical on this very issue as well. They have been against secession before they were for it.
Absolutely, because when you go back to the Kosovar push for independence, and the Russians did not support that. But the U.S. did support it. And again, it's the exact same scenario that we have playing out here. It's just you're reversing the tide. And the U.S. says, we absolutely refuse to accept this, and we will intervene if we believe that there is more aggression. I guarantee you this, the West is going to do everything they can to continue to paint that picture of Russian aggression here. And it's, you know, if you step back from it, stop being emotional about it, and stop trying to resurrect Cold War imagery, where it's, you know, basically this is a replay of Rocky IV, you know, Ivan Drago versus Rocky Balboa. We're not in the Cold War anymore. And it's not as black and white as these are the bad guys, we're the good guys, and we're on the side of democracy, and they're on the side of dominating and conquering innocent people. That's not what's happening here. But that's what the media and the politicians are working very hard to convince people of.
I get this feeling, though, that it's almost... It seems like the ending of another Scooby-Doo episode. You know, I think the administration is still so flustered that the American people were so resoundingly against Syria. And now here we are. We've ratcheted up again. And now the new line in the sand is if Russia goes on, you know, some sort of imperial spree to start taking other Baltic states, we're going to intervene. And I don't know why why is the U.S. government so active? And for good lords, we've been in war now, and Afghanistan, Iraq, there's still troops in both places, despite the president's protestations to the contrary. We've been in war for 13 solid years, and why they want to take on Russia? I think the financial system is probably worse than we would even begin to really understand. I mean, there must be some really I called the U.S. dollar a blood dollar yesterday, and the bankers really must be itching for war, because this kind of conversation and these kind of words and rhetoric are kind of scary.
Well, they are, and I think when we step back from it, look, we had a poll up that shows 56% of Americans say that they don't want the U.S. to get involved in Ukraine. They want the U.S. to back away from what's happening between Russia and Ukraine. Now, consider this. Consider how poor of a job media has done of actually speaking to the reality of the situation there, how poor the job media has done in terms of saying this is the U.S.'s role, this was the European Union's role, this is NATO's role, this is what the U.S. Russians are responding to. Doesn't make the Russians, you know, perfect. It doesn't make the Russians the good guys here, but this is what Crimea asked them to do. This is the referendum. Without presenting the facts of what's happening, you still have 56% of the American population saying, no, we don't want to be involved. I think that people are so tired and so no longer trusting of what our government tells us is now another crucial moment where we must become militarily involved.
Yeah, I wonder how much of it is based upon, like, the troops. I wonder, I mean, the troops have got, even the reserves, the guards, all of these active duty troops and reserves, they have to just be exhausted. I wonder, and, you know, we're still getting reports that 26 veterans per day now are killing themselves.
Yes.
I think the all-volunteer permanent standing army that Madison warned us about, I think it's a little war-weary at this point.
Well, because we're not taking care of those men and women at all. When we have a situation where you have more U.S. soldiers, active duty soldiers, dying as a result of suicide than you do dying as a result of combat, and yet, as you mentioned, we continue to remain in fields of combat across the world, it's not like we've brought all the troops home and you say, well, the numbers are skewed because we're not involved in combat. We have active military interventions, military operations, and a war still going on. Even though we pretend, no, they're coming home in 2014 from Afghanistan, we're keeping thousands of troops there for 10 more years. And yet we have more active duty soldiers killing themselves every year as a result of suicide. They're dying as a result of suicide than we do as a result of combat. And again, where is the media? Where is the media to hold responsible? I don't expect politicians to do the right thing. I think they're scumbags. But I think that the media should and has a responsibility to hold them accountable and to say, before you send any more of our sons and daughters, fathers and mothers, husbands or wives overseas to fight in more of these wars, let's start taking care of the ones we have right now who have already been there, who are suffering as a result of having been sent into these fields of combat. It's disgraceful what we're seeing happen right now, and it's just being completely ignored.
Absolutely. Well, here's the other interesting part about Ukraine. It's completely, once again, removed the IRS issue off of the table of discussion. That, between the missing, lost plane and this Ukrainian situation, you know, Lois Lerner was just back in the headlines again, what, 10 days ago, and now it's completely silent yet again. I can't help but think that, you know, whenever they're really talking about something major, and of course, completely out of context, as is the case in Ukraine, and then we have the distraction of the Malaysian airplane, there's something bigger going on. Do you have any inclination? Like, is it the IRS scandal? Is it even bigger? Is it the fact that Obamacare is failing? What do you think the issue is that's being kind of obfuscated by these other two?
I don't know. I mean, I guess that's a good question. I'm not sure that I'm necessarily subscribed to the belief that they're all related to one thing. I think there are so many things happening simultaneously on a lot of different fronts. And you have a lot of people who find ways to enrich themselves on these different fronts. So I think it's, especially when you're at the top of the administration, you're constantly being pulled in 100 different directions by folks who are wanting to get their piece of the pie, and lobbyists and you know, special interest groups who are pushing. So I think we have a lot of different plates up in the air at the same time. I'm not sure they're being done to distract, but I do think this. I think when we look at what's happening in Ukraine, I'm not sure it's necessarily being done to distract from anything. I think it's a strategy in and of itself to say we were going to turn Ukraine over to the EU, and it's just becoming messed up now. That plan is falling apart because for some reason these guys cannot understand the concept that if you create a power vacuum, someone is going to fill it, and it's probably the guy who lives next door.
So would you say then, that's a fair answer, would you say the Ukrainian situation is the biggest current political situation on the globe? Is there room for that to completely just spin off kilter?
Is it the biggest political situation on the globe? Probably. I think it probably is right now. Only for the fact that, again, and I come at it from a journalist position, right? So one, as a journalist, but two, watching media as well, and saying this is probably the biggest story that I can see that clearly is being misrepresented to the public, more so than others. You know, the Malaysian Airlines story is a very strange one, but I'm not sure if media is attempting to misrepresent that story. They don't seem to be. I think they just don't know what's going on. I don't think anybody seems to know what's going on. Obviously, someone knows. Someone out there does.
Right, they can track all of our phone calls, but they can't find this plane. I mean, what the heck?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're telling me that we know this thing was transmitting a signal for 4 hours after it disappeared, and we cannot trace it? We're, like, flying over the Indian Ocean trying to locate this. I don't know. I think it boggles a lot of people's minds that we have this precision technology. I mean, consider the fact that we are basically blowing people up around the world by having a guy with a video game controller in his hand. And I'm not kidding either. I mean, they're like adapted Xbox 360 controllers that they use. But they're sitting there with a video game controller, and they're supposed to be able to target a guy on the other side of the world and land a bomb on his head.
Yeah, they don't do a very good job at it, though, do they? I mean, they seem to kill a lot of people.
Yeah, well, and I'm not sure if that's because of incompetence or because they just don't care.
Right, yeah. I don't know if, did you ever watch The Collateral Murder? It was a very disturbing video. The one with the Apache helicopter that Chelsea Manning had released and that WikiLeaks had published, where they're just literally gunning down Iraqi children, a journalist, shooting up a van, and just, they are there. And that was not a drone, but it was still a kind of a remote, weird kind of thing. And I don't think these people are. I think you're super detached if you're sitting in a trailer in like New Mexico or Utah or wherever the drone facility is and firing Hellfire missiles in Yemen or in Pakistan, there has to be some form of detachment where it is more like a video game than the fact that you're killing children.
Yeah, and I think there has to be a level of detachment because we, again, if you watch what you're doing, I mean, only 2% of the time does a drone actually kill the high-profile target.
2%?
Only 2%. So 98%. 2%. Yeah, 98% of the time, the numbers are 98% of the time, the high-profile target is missed. So talk about a rate of just incompetence and inability to actually, again, unless you're trying to just create carnage, which may be the strategy. Because if you look at it from any reasonable, logical standpoint, when only 2% of the time you're killing the high-profile target, 98% of the time you're not, that is a unfathomable record.
I've never even heard that statistic. That is, it is mind-numbing. Wow, that is a
horror.
That is like gross mouth, either gross malfeasance or a total disrespect for the lack of life, or for life. I mean, 2% of the time they end up hitting the person they want to hit.
That's correct. A high-profile target that they've gone, they have launched this drone in order to strike. Only 2% of the time do they actually hit the target.
Life is good inside of the empire. I mean, see, this is something
that
we don't even have to think about that. You know, we get up, we go out in our neighborhoods, we drive our SUVs and complain about gasoline, and these people in all of these other countries have to worry about an American drone accidentally firing a Hellfire missile. What has America become? That seems just really awful.
Well, it's obscene. It's absolutely obscene. It's a brutal, brutal policy. In fact, I'll tell you, I'm actually working on a book right now about this, and it's. I think the problem that we run into in America is that we do not know, because we haven't been confronted with some of these realities. You know, the number I just mentioned to you right now, about only 2% of the time hitting that high-profile target. But here's another statistic for you. When a drone hits a location, it blows up a square block. That's the size of the impact of a drone strike. So when people have this picture in their head that this is a very precision attack on someone, it's a completely false sense that they're being given. Even the terminology that's used, you know, they now call them the signature strike program, right? They're no longer called drone strikes because that sounds ugly. It's signature strike, which paints a picture of this being a precise attack on a specific person, and it's not. It blows up a block, a city block, and when you blow up a span of land and space that large, it's no wonder 98% of the time the people killed are collateral damage. That shouldn't be surprising to you. You dropped a bomb trying to kill someone in a Seattle coffee shop, and you blew up a block, and you manage to hit your target, you're going to kill an awful lot of people in addition to that. The collateral damage is going to be enormous. I think the American people just have no clue as to what this policy actually looks like, and that's why they've been able to be silent on it.
So if my neighbor at the end of the road, because I live in an old city, and a Hellfire missile was targeted at him, it would basically take out my house as well. That is, I don't think people fathom that. I've never even seen a graph. It's the wrong word, but I would like to see that illustrated or in some form of a graph or something, because, again, that is a concept that I believe is foreign, even to someone who follows the news such as myself. To picture that in my head, that my entire block would be wiped out, is mind-numbing yet again.
Yeah, and you would be referred to as
collateral damage,
right? If some journalist managed to find out the fact that you were killed, because in the beginning they would say, no, we hit an Al-Qaeda training camp, and then some journalist would say, actually, you didn't, you killed, you know, all these innocent people, and you'll go back and forth a couple of, well, that's not true, and then finally they'll admit, okay, yeah, actually it was. It's so bizarre that we can live in a culture and in a time when that is acceptable to people. It should break your heart.
It does.
You know, a real person, who cares?
Absolutely. We're not supposed to be the Spanish Inquisition, right? We're not supposed to be recreating all the horrendous atrocities that man has that have plagued mankind throughout history. You know, we're now entering in the history books. Someday, hundreds, or maybe if the human race lasts another 500 years and looks back at America 2014, this is the country that was sending robotic drones and destroying entire city blocks. That's going to be part of American history, and that is an absolutely horrendous thing to consider. The legacy of this time is awful.
Especially when you consider that if history were to look back on it, it would say a nation that defined itself as being a Christian nation, a nation that referred to itself as being a nation that was a religion of peace and of God's love, had a policy of killing thousands of people, hundreds of children around the world, and they called them collateral damage, they called it security, they called it safety, and at the same time talked about how their enemy had a religion of hate.
I had a gentleman on last night who was telling me all about the religion of hate. Ben, I got to ask you then, I mean, do you take Bitcoin over at BenSwan.com? Are you taking Bitcoin as part of this Indiegogo campaign?
Absolutely. Now, you can't do it through Indiegogo, but if you go to BenSwan.com, you'll see it, there's a button there that says contribute. If you click on that, you'll see the address for the blockchain. And yes, we not only do we accept Bitcoin, I love Bitcoin. Huge fan of it, and would love for us to be able to fund the entire thing via Bitcoin. So I know some people have been asking about that. And yes, you absolutely can do it. And I'm incredibly grateful for anyone who is able to contribute in that way.
Oh, Ben Swan, maybe in season three. Maybe the whole season three will be funded by Bitcoin, because to me, I love Bitcoin too, because when we talk about this, God, it just seems like a horrendous, awful thing I would have read that I hate to say that the Nazis would have done, right? These indiscriminate drone strikes, this brutalist, militarist campaign. I can't help but think that it's only possible thanks to the U.S. blood dollar that is printed endlessly through the Federal Reserve. And if I can help in any way by not using a U.S. blood dollar in a transaction through Bitcoin, which eventually helps, you know, collapse that bank in a peaceful manner, then I am all for it. And I don't understand how anyone could be a Ron Paul person and not look. I don't know if Bitcoin is going to be the end all be all final cryptocurrency or not, but I hate the Fed. And I'm not going to wait for a politician to write some piece of paper to supposedly end this bank or even get an audit, because this policy, these drone strikes, mercy be upon those who write the story of America in the future, because it is absolutely horrendous. How the hell are we tolerating this? This is not what the country was supposed to be.
Well, and I think that we have an opportunity to change that. I think with the collision of technology and the ability we have to communicate with people and to expose these policies, I think that's where the real change is going to come from. It's going to come when people are confronted with these realities. And that's what you're doing. That's what I'm trying to do. That's what a lot of folks who are listening to you right now, they're trying to do in their sphere of influence. That's what we have to do, is we have to confront people in a compassionate way. Okay, because if you confront people with it, like, you jerk, you monster, your bloodlust is killing people around the world, and they're going to say to you, I don't even know what you're talking about. So we have to do it in a compassionate way that says to people, look, I recognize you don't realize this, but let's talk about the things you don't know and the things that I myself didn't know until recently, and this is the reality of what we're doing. And when you face that reality, and once you know, you can never not know. And that's what I think we have to do, is walk people through this process of knowing and seeing and being confronted by this truth.
Absolutely. I know all the statistics you just told me, I never knew the 2% thing. I've never read that. And I've read a lot of articles about drones. I've listened to a lot of Scott Horton. I don't think I'm uneducated on drones, but I mean, that is astounding. And you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And even though I have a pit in my stomach after talking about these drone strikes and comprehending even more of the destruction, It is. It is a very yin and yang time that we're living in. Despite the brutality of our government, we do. We have these amazing technological whiz-bang gadgets that allow us to circumvent peacefully that system. And that is something to definitely be happy about.
It is. It is. I think that we have to step back and say, you know what? We are incredibly blessed to be alive at this time and at this moment, because we have more access and more ability to change things than people all throughout human history have ever had. There's never been a time in human history when we had the ability to share information, ideas, concepts like we do today. And never has the world been so small in terms of our ability to have this this reach that we have right now. So for everyone out there who gets down and says, oh, this is just, we live in such a terrible time and it's never going to change, listen, believe me, things are going to change. And we have to build coalitions to make that happen. We have to work with people. We have to find people who have been pushed to the edges and been disenfranchised, and we have to build coalitions. But at the end of the day, this is our moment. And I don't believe in coincidence. I don't believe in chance. I believe that we are here at this time for a specific reason, and I see people working in their own way, and they have been, some people for decades, and others of us only for a short time in comparison. But I think we're all beginning to see this energy that's building that says things are going to change. A year and a half ago, we started saying liberty is rising. And I'll tell you, and at the time, people were saying to me, why do you say that? Well, that doesn't make sense. And now all of a sudden, we see there is this incredible movement in the liberty sphere, whether it's in politics or in media or in our churches or in communities. We see liberty rising all across the country. And I believe real change is around the corner.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the Lovolution. I mean, everybody gets woken up at a different time. I mean, for me, it was Waco. And that was only after being pestered for 6 months to watch Rules of Engagement. That was the movie that ruined my life. And I thought, good Lord, how could our government? There's video of our government shooting people coming out of the building. There's infrared footage. That movie ruined my life, and that was the first time. And absolutely, everybody gets to this point where you wake up and you have those rose-colored glasses are removed, and you realize that you're living under a murderous government. And absolutely, we have to bond together and be compassionate and wait for that time when people do come over and open and welcome them with open arms, because this is our moment. This is, you know, the second American Revolution, and it's not going to be like the first revolution. We have the ability, as you said, like no other time in history, to foment a peaceful revolution, to not have to play the government's game of violence, because we have all of the tools at our disposal. And that is an exciting time, and you're exactly right. I mean, there are so many things that we can chalk up to a victory of the liberty movement at this point. It is. It's exciting to be alive during this time, Ben.
It is. It absolutely is. And like I said, if you think the change is going to come easy, it's not. So I would never lie to someone and tell them that it would come easy. Nor should it come easy.
No, and Paine said the same thing. Thomas Paine had written the same thing in The Crisis, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that we are in this moment now where it's going to be painful. It's going to be difficult. And it's going to be a process. Remember that it took progressives about 100 years to completely dismantle the Constitution. And we want to put it back in two or three or four. It doesn't work that way. It is a process. I mean, you and I may not live to see the true fruit of what we are attempting to do here. And it may be our children or our children's children who do. I will tell you this, with everything that's inside of me, Allison, I absolutely believe that the hardest job is to plant a seed for fruit that you yourself will never see. It's very difficult, but it's the only thing we can do at this point, right, is to begin to set a path and to begin to train up the next generation and the next generation to carry on that torch of liberty. And if we don't, it will go out. It
absolutely
will be lost.
You know, Ben, I don't care if I'm alive to see, you know, the total blossoming of the new orchard of liberty. Really, when I look back on my life, I want to be able to say that at least I tried to help forward the cause, the glorious cause of liberty. So I totally agree with you. We may not see it. We won't, you know, the utopian idea of freedom, but I want my life to be part of pushing forward for freedom, not for more of this state intervention. And if it's my lifetime or my son's lifetime or even my grandchildren, whenever. But the human race deserves to be free. And if we can be part of that, even getting the ball rolling, then I'm happy to be lucky enough to be alive at that time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, we have, that's all we can really do at this point, right, is to really begin to change the process and to redesign what's already been set into place and set into motion. But remember this, too, that before the United States ever came along, before there was ever the beginning of this American experiment of liberty, that liberty itself is about 1,000 years old. In fact, Robin Corner, who you know very well, wrote an article for BenSwan.com titled The 1,000 Years of Liberty. Liberty turns 1,000 years old. And he talks about this 1,000-year heritage of liberty that was passed down through generations, that was passed down through different people groups, that was passed down really from all around the world. And different groups of people who saw glimpses of liberty and had little opportunities to experience bits of it. And it wasn't until we reached the United States of America that we really saw, you know, an opportunity. And I think that's where we are today, is to not forget what we have. I apologize. There's like an alarm going off here.
Not a problem. No, Ben, I mean, it is awesome to talk because it is. It's just like a regular conversation. Exactly. It is. It took thousands of years for the individual to even be elevated to the point as the standard bearer of liberty. And that was the American experiment. And can we now, as Americans, as inheritors of that notion, that gift of liberty, human freedom, can we make sure that we don't just completely allow that to be destroyed? And I think what you're doing is absolutely excellent. I know I've kept you on the phone for like an hour, and I apologize. I didn't know how long you could stay, but I mean, I want to give you a chance to tell everybody again, where can they donate and what's the total goal and how many more days do we have left to get you there?
So as of tomorrow, we'll have 30 days left. So we're, like I said, we're in good shape right now, but we need people to contribute and we need people to come and be a part of what we're doing. And there's no amount that is too small. So you can go with, you know, $5 or $10, and it makes a difference. You know, if we can get 1,000 people to do $10, you know, that is a huge accomplishment as far as I'm concerned. So what we're really trying to do is just move the ball down the field here in terms of creating content that is going to go out to mainstream audiences. And that's what we're really trying to get at right now. Put it in front of people where they are confronted with some of these truths. And so, again, but it's not something we can do on our own. We definitely need help to do so. So go to BenSwan.com. You'll see the Indiegogo tab there on the right-hand side of the page. You can click there to contribute. If you want to do Bitcoin, as I said, would love for you to do that as well. You can click the Contribute tab on BenSwan.com, and that'll get you to where you can contribute via Bitcoin. And then the other thing you can do also, if you go and you share, or if you say, well, I don't really have much that I can contribute, then share it with your circle of influence. Share it with your family, your friends. Tweet it out to people or put it on your Facebook wall and tell people, hey, be a part of this and support this guy, because what we're really trying to do is just do honest work in media. And as you know, Allison, it's a tall task to do that these days.
Absolutely. Well, let me ask you this. Is there an embeddable widget from the Indiegogo campaign?
I believe there is, yes.
Well, as long as you don't mind, I'd like to put that on Daily Paul Radio, and then I'd like to copy your Bitcoin address, and we can put it kind of like at the top of the page as like a top bar header where they can donate Bitcoin, and we'll go ahead and embed the Indiegogo widget as long as you're fine with that.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. That would be terrific.
Absolutely, because you are the outlet. I mean, you are producing high quality broadcasts. This isn't, you know, not to forego any of the journalists who are, you know, kind of guerrilla journalists and do YouTube channels in their dens in their house. But I mean, you are doing a production that requires research and investigation. And we really should all get behind this kind of outlet because you do good work.
Well, I appreciate that. And to that point, you know, some people will say, you know, why do you need so much money to do this? Well, because in order for us to get content, and let me just tell you real quick, we're going to Amazon Prime. So the Truth and Media Project is headed to Amazon Prime. We have been trying to get onto Hulu, and that is so difficult to do. And part of it's because Hulu, especially now, is looking for, like, celebrity-type stuff. So we're really fighting to get it on there. But I'll tell you this. I can't take them, you know, me sitting in my living room talking and say, let's get this on Hulu. So we're really trying to get this content into a place where mainstream people who are outside of this whole liberty discussion, where they exist right now, and introducing them to these concepts. And that is, it's a process. It's a difficult process. But it's one that we can do on our own.
Right on. Now, are you on Roku? If I have a Roku box, can I pick up the Truth in Media?
You can. There's a Ben Swan channel on Roku, so you just type in Ben Swan or you type in Truth in Media, and you will see season one is completely up there. And the shorter pieces we've been doing that you guys play on the radio, we also have those as videos. And so we're going to start uploading those to the Roku channel as well, so that we'll have those shorter ones on there as well. But you can just find the Truth in Media Project, and you'll see the B-Swan logo, and you can add that to your channel list on Roku.
Now, that's pretty awesome. Now, before I let you go, you guys are giving away a gun, or did I hear that right? Or you're giving away a rifle or something?
An AR-15. We are giving away an AR-15. Now, let me clarify, okay? We're not going to take an AR-15 and put it in the mail and send it to somebody, okay? So that's not how it works. The way it's set up is essentially we're having a contest, a giveaway, if you will, where anybody can go. They can sign up at BenSwan.com. You'll see it when you click on the homepage over on the right-hand side. You're going to see, you know, click here to win an AR-15. So you click on it, and when you do, it's going to take you to this form, and you fill out the form, and once you fill out that form, you're entered, okay? Now, the way this works is if you win, and on April 19th, we're going to have a drawing, and we're going to go ahead and select the winner. The winner will have to go to a licensed gun dealer. When you go there, you're going to have to pass the background checks that are required in your state, any federal background check you have to require, any state background checks. If you live in a state where there's a modification, because as you know, California, for instance, has modified, you know, what is considered legal for an AR-15, we will actually have it modified to fit those state laws. We're not going to send you a weapon that would violate state law. And so folks will be able to get it. If you are not eligible, meaning under state law or federal law, if you are not eligible to have that AR-15, then you're not going to get it. And within 48 hours, we're going to draw a new name, and we're going to pull someone else. So, you know, it's not like we're going to show up and open up the trunk of a car and you get to have the AR-15. Having said that, the reason we're doing it is it goes back to this discussion of drone strikes. I really wanted to do something that I thought could help draw attention to the fact that the media has attacked gun owners in this country and firearms owners in this country and those who own quote-unquote assault weapons in this country. We have to get rid of AR-15s, they say. We have to get rid of assault weapons, they say, in order to protect children. But here's a fact that our media never discusses. When we talk about Sandy Hook and the kids who died at Sandy Hook, 11 times, okay, wrap your head around this number. 11 times the number of children have died in Somalia, Pakistan, and Yemen in the past 7 years from drone strike than who died at Sandy Hook. So what we're trying to draw attention to is that if our media were honest about how dangerous weapons are and children dying at the hands of weapons, they would be calling not for law-abiding citizens to have AR-15s taken away from them. They'd be calling for the president to have the power of drone strikes taken away from him if they were actually concerned about kids. And so we're trying to draw attention to that hypocrisy. Any help the folks out there can give, go sign up for it, but also share it within your circles again to let people know. Because we do, we want to draw attention to how disgusting of a policy that is within our media.
Absolutely. It is a very, very disgusting policy. Although I will say, I think a promo video of you with, you know, like an old 1970s car with you standing by a trunk full of guns, that might do well for promoting season two. That I would love to see that promo. But I think, is there any reason you chose? That was what, when you said that, that was, I immediately pictured a promo of you standing with like a, at the back of a real old kind of car from the 70s with a trunk full of guns. But I digress. Is there any reason you picked April 19th? Does that have some historical significance to the drawing?
No, it's actually because our fundraiser for the Indiegogo, which this is not connected to. You do not have to give to the Indiegogo in order to
No purchase necessary.
None whatsoever. But April 18th is the end of our crowdsource, and April 19th is a Saturday, and we decided, you know what, let's just go ahead and have it right there at the end, since we'll have wrapped all this other stuff up anyways. Let's just make that as part of it as well.
Excellent, excellent. Ben Swan, you're awesome. You have been on for, I'm sorry if I've kept you on longer than you had thought you would be on, but I totally appreciate it. I love having an excellent conversation about just all the stuff that we've discussed, which I will put up over at dailypaulradio.com that'll be available on demand. Ben, one more time, are you are still sticking with Twitter instead of Facebook? Is it still giving you fits?
We're on Facebook, so you can go to Facebook, but I'm not a fan of Facebook. I feel like they, as we talked about before, I built too much property on their real estate, and I don't like how they are manipulating their process. So, but I am on Facebook. You can find me there by typing in Ben Swan, and you can also find me on Twitter at @BenSwan_.
Well, Ben, thank you so much for coming on. Thanks for sending us those Truth in Media moments. We love to run them. I know the listeners appreciate it. Instead of always hearing Fox News, to hear you every third hour. You are fair, as we talked about with the whole how Russia was hypocritical on secession. And we'll make sure we get your Bitcoin address up there on the front page of Daily Paul, and I'll check out the embed code for the Indiegogo campaign. I wish you the best success. I mean, I really am looking forward to season two. I think you've done an amazing job, and I look forward to talking to you again soon on the Allison Bricker Show.
Thank you so much, Allison.
Take care, Ben. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen.
Daily Paul Radio. Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. WGRR Digital.